The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to our top stories this hour. Because I am obsessed with fairness, and I always like getting people on who have a different point of view than mine. Yesterday I was talking about how I did a little math project and plotted for the last decade the snowpack. And I picked Stevens Pass as a representative snowpack. And the trend line is we're getting more snow. And that surprises me because a few years ago, there were all these hysterical news stories that because of global warming, that the snowpack's going to decrease and that, in 50 years, there won't be any ski areas in Washington, or if there are, they will have almost no season. I'm skeptical of stuff like that, but I'm always open to other points of view. And Cliff Mass from the University of Washington, he's going to join me in just a few minutes because I respect Cliff a lot. I'm guessing he has a different perspective than me on this issue, and he's just a good dude. So we'll talk to Cliff in just a couple of minutes here. But first, let's get to our big lead.
The big lead, top story.
I got an email, and I'm going to catch up with the people who run this apartment building. But it's really a creepy story on Queen Anne. And you may recall that last summer there was a Queen Anne resident as Antifa and Black Lives Matter were marching through their neighborhood. And a Queen Anne resident came out and just was taking pictures. He said, "I've never seen anything like this in our neighborhood." And somebody in the crowd smashed his head. He needed stitches, had to be taken to the hospital. And we're seeing this more and more, that the strategy is to go into residential neighborhoods and just start destroying people's property, destroying people's homes. So I got this email from these people in a Queen Anne, the owner, and then he said his building manager would talk to us as well. But he was telling me that a rock got thrown through their apartment building last night. And on the rock was a very creepy message. And I bring this up. It is such an important story because you need to know that what is going to be demanded of you is full compliance. So as the rock was thrown through the front door, it had a message written on it with a Sharpie. "My humanity is tied to your humanity. Hello, friend." And they throw it through the front door of this apartment building. We'll hear their story coming up tomorrow. But they want to just go into neighborhoods. They want to stretch the police forces so thin that the police eventually become despondent because they can't do their jobs anymore. Our friend Andy Ngo, who's been a frequent guest on our show, he's based in Portland. He's written the book that chronicles what an absolutely destructive force Antifa is in our society. He was talking with Lawrence Jones on Fox last night. And Chaz in Seattle came up as they were talking about what was another massive riot in Portland over the weekend that smashed businesses and residential properties.
Well, this is like what's been happening since May of 2020. Antifa routinely go to residential and business areas and property one by one, intimidate people, shine lights into the faces of residents who dare to look out their windows or their balconies. they're trying to make it so that recovery from COVID-19-related economic policies are impossible. They want to create a power vacuum so that they can recreate like what they did last year in Chaz in Seattle when they took over property and created an autonomous zone. That's what they're trying to do in Portland. And I think what is most probably sickening about the riot over the weekend in Portland is that it occurred during a time when there were multiple shootings happening across the city of Portland, deadly shootings, actually, and they were straining police resources at a time when people were literally dying.
Yeah, and that's the strategy. It's already begun to be implemented here in Seattle as well.
This has been going on for months on end now. Antifa rioted last year in Portland for more than 120 days in a row. Now it's weekly or every other week. I've talked to my law enforcement sources on the ground, and they have basically just letting me know that there's just not the resources to respond anymore, which has been the goal of Antifa, to get local city council to slash the budget, to make morale go down the toilet so that officers resign, so that they can wreak havoc and cause misery and do it with impunity.
Yep, that is the strategy in both Seattle, Portland, and any place where Antifa is running wild. And it doesn't help that we now have a president who denies that Antifa even exists.
Antifa's an idea, not an organization.
Oh, you got it.
Not militia.
No, it's just an idea that's smashing in people's heads and destroying homes. You got to be aware of this because they are coming to neighborhoods. And maybe people feel a little detached if it's somebody else's business that gets smashed. But if it's your home and they were spraying graffiti on people's houses, now, you know, Queen Anne apartment building gets attacked again. It's coming unless we stop it. And we got to have politicians who free up our cops to help stop this. But again, you got a president now who said, it's not even an organization, just an idea. Be on guard. Up next in The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
If you're listening to the show on Monday, I did a little research project over the weekend. I have family members who are avid skiers. They were talking about how fantastic the snowpack is this year. And I looked at Stevens Pass. I found this great website that gives you the year-by-year snowpack for any ski resort in the United States. And so I tracked the snowpack at Stevens for the last decade and then plotted the best trend line for those that data. And lo and behold, it was going up after all these doom and gloom stories about how skiing was going to disappear in the Cascades that I was reading just a few years ago. But I thought, instead of me just being an amateur climatologist, I thought I would turn to a real expert, and that is Cliff Mass, professor of atmospheric science at the University of Washington and a good friend of our show. Cliff, good to talk to you again.
Good to be back and happy to talk about snowpack.
Yeah, so what I said on the air, and clearly I'm an amateur in this field, but I said if the snowpack trend line is that we're getting more and more snow, I went and found all these news stories, Cliff, from 2015 that were saying we just had a horrible year and that's a harbinger of disappearing snowpacks and maybe ski resorts not having snow in 50 years. So is any of that, either the news stories from 6 years ago or my research, which is valid here?
Well, I actually wrote a paper on this, and I've been looking at it every year very carefully. And the truth is, snowpack has not declined very much during the last 40, 50 years. So it's actually been quite stable. Now, looking forward into the century, we think that global warming will probably reduce the snowpack by the time we get to mid to end century, by maybe 30-40%, if the current trajectory continues.
Well, wait a second. When you say the current trajectory continues, But you, right before that, you said the current trajectory is that the snowpack is actually getting better in most places.
Well, let me be careful. I mean, the current trajectory of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere, carbon dioxide, that's what I mean. So okay. If you look at the trend over the last 30, 40 years, snowpack has not changed much in the Cascades. And that's in contradiction to some of the ominous warnings that came out, you know, 15, 20 years ago that the snowpack was disappearing. It was gone by 50%. By the 2020s, the snowpack was right. Down tremendously. I mean, that none of that stuff panned out. Okay, that was all exaggeration and hype. But what I'm saying is that if we keep on putting CO2 in the atmosphere, the models predict that, you know, we will warm around here and the snowpack will decline, particularly in the second half of the century.
But why hasn't that manifested itself in some way by 2021? Because we've been putting a lot of carbon into the atmosphere, and it just seems to me that if these dire predictions for the future are going to come true, why hasn't it started to manifest itself yet?
Well, we are very fortunate here to be downstream of the Pacific Ocean, which is very slow to warm up. And so we're going to be one of the last places that the global warming signal is clear. So, you know, the ocean is our secret weapon to slow global warming. But if you believe the models, we will see substantial warming by the end of the century if the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere continues to rise relatively rapidly. So, you know, that's in the future.
Isn't that what the models were saying 20, 25 years ago when they said temperatures were going to rise 3.5 degrees Fahrenheit? And as you just said, by the 2020s, we're going to see this massive decline. Are the models that much better in your view now?
Well, the models are better. And, of course, we know how the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere. We know what that has happened, and we know what's going to happen in the next 10 years. That's pretty much for sure. So the models are not perfect. I think some of the models back in the 1990s and 2000s were overdoing it. Okay, they were warming up too much. But even if you take the least draconian, the least severe models, you know, the ones that have been performing the best over the last decade or two, they still indicate warming by the end of the century, and there will be a modest loss of snowpack, you know, anywhere from 30 to 40% to maybe 50% if the CO2 in the atmosphere continues to increase in the way it's been happening. So,
and here's the problem that I see with all of this politically, because I'm not a global warming denier. Some people have tried to attach that to me, and that simply is not so. But I'm very skeptical because of how wildly exaggerated claims have been for the last 30 years. And, you know, again, last week, John Kerry said that we have 9 years. We have 9 years. And I don't know, like in Washington, we're talking about this massive carbon tax. The legislature's talking about that right now. But we're only responsible, our state, by my calculations, Cliff, our state is responsible for about 0.2% of the world's climate emissions, which statistically means nothing. I mean, we just don't contribute to the world's emissions. And if China and India keep pumping stuff into the atmosphere, I don't know that I agree with this idea that we need to tax the people of this state billions of dollars so that we can have a statistically negligible impact on the world's climate.
Well, I mean, there's a few things we've got to consider here. First, the media has grossly exaggerated this whole issue. I mean,
some of the media,
not you, but some of the media, some of the mainstream media, certain newspapers in town and others have grossly exaggerated what's happening and what's going to happen, and talks about existential threats, et cetera. I mean, it's all nonsense. I mean, there's really no basis for it. And certain politicians have been exaggerating it hopelessly. A good example of the wildfires, you know, suggesting that, you know, all these wildfires that we've seen are all due to global warming. It's really nonsensical. So we have that problem.
Well, I'm just going to shift gears real quick because I only have a couple minutes here. But I read a blog post that you had a week or so ago about council culture. And, you know, I think just having this conversation on my radio show, it kind of puts you in the crosshairs of the radical left. And as you pointed out in the blog post, you were instrumental in saving a public radio station, and they fired you because you weren't consistently far left enough for them. And I just wanted to see, how are you doing with all of that?
Well, I mean, it was extraordinarily disappointing. A public radio station kicked me off because they didn't like what I was saying about other topics. And the real backstory is climate change was central to this.
Right.
That some of the activists left in town and certain organizations in town did not like me giving the truth about climate change here. And they wanted me off that station. And that's been going on for a few years. I barely held on in that station because they didn't like what I said about climate change.
I know the feeling about barely holding on. So, yeah, they've been coming after me pretty good too. So, yeah. So, and this is, it used to be KPLU, KNKX. Is that right?
That's right. So it became KNKX, and it became very clear that the leadership and some of the financial supporters had a very skewed political viewpoint, let's say towards the left.
Yeah.
And they were not happy with someone like myself who had credentials, who were basically providing the truth about climate change. And then when I wrote a blog, when I was repulsed by some of the violence downtown during the riots, that was all they needed. And that's when they kicked me off. Not for what I said on KNKX,
right,
but
right.
What I did in my blog.
Yeah, which was, I remember that blog post, and it was entirely reasonable and even a bit prescient, because I think a lot of the stuff that you talked about is just getting worse and worse and worse downtown. Well, hang in there. I'm not a fan of this cancel culture thing, and you're a voice that absolutely has to be part of the landscape in our region. It's crazy.
Well, hopefully my blog won't get canceled, but I think it's scary when a public radio station is looking at the social media of people that are speaking on it, and if they don't like the political approach on someone's social media, that they kick them off the station. I mean, that's cancel culture at its worst.
Yes, it is.
And for a public radio station to do it is unacceptable.
Crazy. All right, Cliff Mass professor of atmospheric science at the University of Washington. Cliff, it's always great talking with you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on, Dory.
Anytime. And here's a guy, I'm confident that Cliff would identify as being, somewhat left of center, fairly moderate guy, who just bases his opinion of things on science and facts and, like you said, he had a blog post that was critical of how violent things had gotten in downtown Seattle and all the windows that are boarded up. And so KNKX, and I don't mind going after another radio station in this case. I mean, they're not much in town. But this public radio, they get funding from government and taxpayers. And they're donors. I mean, that's the biggest part is donors. But if somebody isn't radical left, they aren't allowed on a public radio station, or this public radio station, I should say. And look, I'll have Cliff on to, he disagreed with my conclusions on the Cascade snowpack. I want to hear that. I love talking with people who disagree with me. But, oh, man. Not the far left, man. They do not want any dissent at all. And that is your big lead this hour.
The big lead on Cairo Radio.
Gonna check the news for you, and then the very latest on what's going on with the teachers all around the Puget Sound area. It is absolutely reprehensible what the teachers' unions are doing. And everybody's got to stand up. to them. Talk about that next on the Dory Monson Show. There was a story that was in our newscasts earlier today about a teacher down in Tacoma who has now agreed to resign. He's been on paid leave, which is paid vacation, since September, because he's been identified as being a member of the Proud Boys, which some people describe as an alt-right hate group. And so what's interesting is he worked for the Bethel School District. He was a teacher, English teacher, at Graham Kapowsin High School. And somebody made a complaint to the Bethel School District and said that this guy was a member of the Proud Boys. And Bethel investigated it. They said there was no overtly racial or otherwise inappropriate statements that warranted further action by the district. But then the guy moves to the Tacoma School District. Somebody launches another complaint about him. And now he is going to resign his teaching job. And there are a lot of people who are trying to, you know, dox this guy. And look, I don't think we should have extremists teaching in the schools. But we've entered an era where if you are a right-wing extremist, you will be fired or forced to resign. If you are a left-wing extremist, you can be part of the indoctrination of your ideology into the kids. And we talked about that a lot the first week of February, when a lot of local school districts had embraced a Black Lives Matter curriculum. And, you know, I've told you how I feel about the organization Black Lives Matter, that they are a Marxist-based organization, that the founders of Black Lives Matter have admittedly, openly talked about being Marxist. And one of their stated goals is the disassembly of the traditional Western nuclear family, which is an unbelievably damaging message to spread. And when you look at Marxism and communism, I mean, 100 million human beings have died over the last century because of communism. 100 million have died because of communism. And yet a Marxist ideology can be widespread in our schools. And all I'm saying is, you get rid of the extremists, get rid of the alt-right extremists, even though a school district investigation couldn't pin anything that was overtly racial or hateful about this particular teacher. But because he is not a left-wing extremist, he is forced to resign. We should scrub the left-wing Marxists. They outweigh the alt-right teachers about, I would guess, 50-1 in our public schools. The left-wing Marxist teachers who espouse an ideology that has been responsible for 100 million dead in this world. So all I'm saying is, let's be fair in what we protect our kids from in our public schools. Okay, speaking of which, as you know, Renton kindergarten, first grade, SPED kids are supposed to go back tomorrow in class. Renton said, we had an agreement with the teachers. And then the teachers union just said, nope, not going back in the buildings. And as I've been saying, I always separate the unions from the great teachers. But to be a great teacher, now, you're going to have to start defying your union, and you're going to have to withdraw from the union. I said a couple of hours ago, the union's stink is starting to get on its members in teaching because we're talking about children's lives that are being destroyed. And I found this to be very informative. There was, this was wonderful. Hundreds and hundreds of parents and kids rallied in the Lake Washington School District, which said, we're shut down from in-person for the rest of the year. And listen to the parents and kids and the toll this is taking and what the teachers' union is doing to the psyche of these children and families.
Really tough time.
I have an older son. He's sixth grade year. He's having a pretty hard time.
I'm in AP chemistry. It's hard. It's hard to not have that, like, communication with the teachers and, like, the students.
It's pretty lonely. Yeah, because I don't really get to talk to people that often.
Tough to learn, lonely, don't get to talk. And when they found out that Lake Washington said, yeah, we're shutting things down. Grades 6 to 12 will not return this school.
It was very disappointing. Mine says, what about us? Because I feel like we, like, as students, we don't have a lot of representation about the subject.
It was sort of a punch in the gut to hear that it was decided.
It's gotten everybody upset and angry and just frustrated and feeling this just this place of helplessness.
Here's a little girl talking to the school board.
You have a job to do, teach kids.
Ooh, that's a novel concept. You have a job to do, teach kids. And kids are not learning. Remote learning has been a disaster. And we all know that. Everybody knows it. Kids know it. Parents know it. The teachers know it. The administration knows it. And yet the teachers' union doesn't care if they are doing this to families.
My older son has become a recluse. He prefers to just stay inside.
I want my son back. I want to see him smile again. I want to see him laugh again.
Do you hear the pain in these parents' voices? Their voices are quivering. My son's become a recluse. I want to see my son smile again. And that's why I say, and I've been saying it for 20-plus years, there is no more force destructive in all of public policy than teachers' unions. And now we're seeing it firsthand. Parents are experiencing it. You're hearing the absolute pain that the unions are inflicting on children. Children who just saw a stat this afternoon about how much parents are spending now on psychiatry and anxiety for their kids because a lot of them are suicidal.
Keep in mind, all of the lonely, depressed, anxious, suicidal, bored kids that are sitting quietly at home.
Teachers, withdraw from the union. The union is destroying the lives of children. And you better start acting like you care what your union's doing. And we'll get to today, or Asmadia, our favorite sound bites, coming up next here on the Dory Monson Show. And down the stretch we come. What a day, what a show, what a show, what a day. Oh, and we're not finished. It ain't over till it's over. Let's get to our favorite sound bites of the day.
Dory Monson's awesome audio clips of the day.
Yeah, that's what this is. Okay, let's start. A guy named Seth John. This is a guy who was on the Athletes Council. He was a professional soccer player, and he's now 38 years old. He's on the U.S. Soccer Federation's Athletes Council. And he just made a speech requesting that athletes stand for the national anthem. It's so stupid. It's not funny. He has just been removed from the U.S. Soccer Federation Athletes Council in part because of that. He explained on Fox News today what happened.
East Afghanistan, the roadways are pretty poor. The earth gives way next to this little
hey, Dory.
Terrain wall. So we roll over.
Clarify. No,
you got, that's not what this cut is. So he is actually a Paralympian, right? And on the U.S. Soccer Paralympics team. And he wasn't on Fox News, but he was on, this is his story of how he got injured.
Well, wait, no, he was on Fox News this morning. That's not what this is?
No, that's not what this is. This is his story of how he got injured.
Oh, for crying out loud. Okay, I sent you was on him on Fox News this morning.
No, you sent me a tweet to look for him, but but whatever.
Okay. All right, let me reset this because I thought we had different audio than what we have. Okay. So, yes, he was Paralympian. And anyway, he has now been removed from this athletes council because he's requested that athletes stand for the national anthem. Anyway, so here is the background info on this guy.
East Afghanistan, the roadways are pretty poor. The earth gives way next to this little terrain wall. So we roll over, roll down, and I end up submerged under the water with a truck inverted on top of me. I'm trying to get back in, but I'm stuck in that position. At that point, it's like, you got to get out of here. You leave the vehicle and set up a perimeter, and they end up medevacing me out from there. They diagnosed me with a traumatic brain injury, spinal cord injury, peripheral femoral phrenic nerve damage running in my right arm, right leg, and my diaphragm paralyzed. I never for a second thought that I'd be done. I never thought that this was going to end my career. I never thought that I wouldn't be up and running in no time. Laying in hospital and having a number of different teams of doctors tell you that you're not going to be able to do these things, the things you're normally accustomed to do. We need to focus on your quality of life. And I knew then that I wanted to push the envelope. I knew how precious life was and how much I hadn't experienced of this world, all the beauty of this world.
Okay, so guys in a wheelchair, had TBI, and he said in a speech last week, he said that he thinks athletes should stand for the national anthem, something he's not able to do, and that gets him removed from this athletes council. All right, let's go to Texas here, where Governor Abbott has just opened up the state. And they're doing a lot better than Washington is with getting kids back in school and everything like that.
So today, I'm issuing a new executive order that rescinds most of the earlier executive orders. Effective next Wednesday, all businesses of any type are allowed to open 100%. That includes any type of entity in Texas. Also, I am ending the statewide mask mandate.
Wow. Ending the mask mandate and every business is 100% in Texas now. Do we think that the virus is more dangerous in Washington? No. Governor Abbott believes in freedom. Governor Inslee believes in control. All right, that's going to do it for us, and we are going to toss it over to Tom Curley coming up next. I'll see you back here tomorrow. I know.
That's right. I'm history. I'm out of here. I got the lucky ticket home, baby. Rolling, rolling, rolling. Keep the wagon rolling, Rawhide.
Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. You're really a fantastic audience.